all the methods you use from a place which, when the method starts to work, it's all different. It's all different. In other words, once the door starts to open, once the thing starts to happen to you, all the stuff I've said is absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Because you don't sit around figuring out how to get there when you're already there. So some of us get into, we know that like acid will take us to a place really awful close to there if it's not there. And so we do that again. And what in fact we do is we override, by doing that, we override all the reasons why we're not there all the time. We chemically just push them aside so we get there. You do it with pranayama too. Pranayama's the same thing. It overrides the things you're not. And that's why you go into the kingdom of heaven and then you get booted out again, because you're not ready to stay in it. And after you've gone in and out enough, you get to the place where you're perfectly content to just let it all unfold at the rate it unfolds, because you see that you can't rush the process, that even the desire to rush it is a desire you've got to give up. Can't get greedy for enlightenment, because it comes at the rate it comes anyway. And the greediness is just another place along the path. Okay? Just another place. And all I can do is keep telling about traps that you can come, that the minute you see it's a trap, you cannot get caught in it, like the trap of dishonesty with yourself about where you're at. Like in that singing, we were all at different levels of how open we are. Some of us would like to be more open than we are. Some of us can immediately just give up ourselves and just merge, but that's very few. And the rest are trying, and trying becomes the place that is another place. It's a place over there, and the, you know, 3 miles down the road over there, you'll come to a place called trying. That's a place, an interesting place. Sit there for a few incarnations. I tried, he tried. Can't say he didn't try. But trying is beyond the winning, so says the Book of Tao, and it says it quite rightly. Trying is just another place. In India, they talk about about people who are very sattvic, that is, they're very pure and they're aimed towards the light. They're good people. They're good people. And they say, Ramakrishna says, everybody is caught in the chains of their own desire. The sattvic person's chains are made of gold, not iron. But a chain is still a chain. And a lot of people get so good, they're just good in the way they're doing it all, and they're doing their sadhana each day, their spiritual work, and they're being good and kind and all that, and nothing's happening. You just feel the totally mechanical way in which they are becoming, they're just stuck in a place where they're going towards enlightenment. That's their trip. Because the thing is, you've got to even give up goodness. You've got to give up trying. You've got to give it all up. You've got to be right here now. So if you don't feel like singing, I don't feel like singing. That's who I am now. Not, well, I'll make believe I feel like singing. Because I think I ought to want to feel like singing. That degree of honesty is the only thing that makes it. Everything less than that falls short. The absolute forced honesty to be exactly where you are at any moment. Just exactly where you are. Which means that you have to recognize a lot of your desires that are still uncooked seeds. We can all read Buddha's life or the high lives and then try to make believe we are it. But it doesn't work. It's the difference between a rock and roll band that writes a very high song out of their own state of being, and another band that plays it in a mimicry sense. If you're sensitive, you just get turned on by one band and you don't get turned on by another. Like when I experience depression, depression, instead of denying the depression, I'm too holy to be depressed. Obviously, I'm not depressed. What could depression mean to a person like, you know, that bullshit? See? The fact is, here I am, I'm depressed, man. Wow. See? And it takes, it's very tricky because I get into a game with everybody else where they say, oh, aren't you high? Aren't you? Ooh, wow. You know, and then suddenly you're depressed. And you got to be depressed. And you look around and, wow, dig this depression. Whew, isn't that fierce? You see the depression and it's like a gray room with no doors. I am in a depression. And then by allowing the depression to be, you immediately see the way through and out. For example, I'll give you another kind of yoga based on this sound called Nad Yoga. In Nad Yoga, you just take earplugs, which are over there, you just take any kind of earplugs or stuff, and you stuff up your ears. It's a very simple yoga. Just sit down, stuff your ears, and start to listen to the sounds inside. And you will start to hear one sound or another. You may hear waterfalls. You may hear a crowd in a railroad station. You may hear the sound of crickets, or thousands of bees buzzing, or flutes, or drums, or cymbals. There are a whole set of possibilities. There's 9 of them, actually. You can label them with different words, but there's 9 different sounds. And the game is to listen to whatever sound is dominant at that moment, and then bring your mind to one pointedness on that sound until you become the sound, and then you use that sound as the base from which you listen to the next sound. Okay? See, anybody can do this yoga. It's a very, very good yoga, by the way. So you just put go into the earphone, put the earplugs in, go inside, and you start to listen. Then you hear the ocean, like listening through a conch shell. So you listen and listen and listen until the ocean just absorbs you and fills you, and you are the ocean. And then at that point, you'll start to hear the next one. Suddenly there'll be these crickets in the distance. And you just climb the chakras. You climb the astral planes through these sounds, one after another after another. It's a very, very good yoga, by the way, to do. Very good yoga. See, so what's happened to me, for example, is, like, I used to love music. Played the cello. Loved classical music. Then I loved rock and folk music. Then I loved rock and roll music. Then I loved Indian music. And I continued to love all the rest of it as I loved more and more music. And I loved more and more subtle forms of music until finally, it started that I sat in India for many months just looking at a wall with no music around other than when we'd sing Hare Krishna, which, or Ram or something like that, which I loved, or Sri Ram, Jai Ram. And then pretty soon I started to do this inner thing, and the inner sounds were so powerful and beautiful that I began to see that all external sound had to go through my eardrum, which was merely the crudest approximation of the inner sounds that I was hearing. And pretty soon it got higher for me to sit and put earplugs in than to listen to stereophonic earphones. It was the same thing that happened with my thought process. It got to the point where I can't even imagine really a movie that will really turn me on ever again, because I can't imagine any kind of linear storyline that I'll take in through my senses that will be as high as my own life experiences are, because every moment is like baklava. It's so many levels of absurdity, cosmic humor, poignancy, everything. It's all storylines all at once. And I'm supposed to come down to follow somebody else's mind trip and take it in through these gross senses, which is a very delicate matter, because it turns out then that the only kind of art and music is that which helps you become conscious. See? And that's why you end up looking at mandalas. See, mandalas are visual devices, just like the sound was for the auditory one. If you've seen a mandala, it's a square. It's got four gates. And then in the gates are a circle, and then it squares within circles, and then the circles get inner and inner until there's an inner circle. And when you go to a Tibetan physician, and you happen to be sick with something or other, a mental or a physical illness, he doesn't give you a prescription, say, go down and get 3-phenobarbital or something like that. He gives you a mandala. And you take the mandala home and you stick it up on the wall and you sit down in front of it and you look at it. And what you do is you let your field of vision become the entire mandala, and then very slowly as you let it happen, you get sucked in more and more into the center. And the particular center of the particular mandala he's given you, when you go through that center, you come into it and then go through it, that puts you into a space where the thing that was wrong with you doesn't exist anymore. Okay, that's how highly articulated this game is. It's the same thing as faith healing. See, the way faith healing works is the faith healer is functioning at a vibration different than the vibration at which the illness exists. And all he does is take you to a vibrational rate where the illness doesn't manifest anymore, because you are somebody else, and that somebody else doesn't have that illness. And all he does is give you a contact high with his vibrational rate. And mandalas are very high visual statements, so pretty soon you start to see mandalas in everything you look at. You take each thing and it'll take you out in a certain way, and that'll teach you something else. It'll finish off another trip. But something very profound happens along this journey, and you've got to appreciate that when it happens to you, you will experience horror and discomfort and a feeling like you've lost some of the exquisiteness of life because you're not enjoying the flash you're used to from the things you used to enjoy them from. And you say, wow, what's happening? Am I becoming dead? Is life turning off? And you've got to accept transformations that occur in you when whole new things. One couple I was with the other day said, you know, when we kiss and start to make love, we burst out laughing. Because in a way, we're already higher than the place we have to come back into to go through this dance. And we haven't yet figured out a high enough way to do the dance so that we don't have to go back into our old habits, which seem so trivial to us in view of where we are together. Gurdjieff, somebody said to Gurdjieff, our friends don't find us as interesting as they used to, now that we're doing the work. Gurdjieff says, it's only the beginning, I'll tell you. And it is interesting because there's no desire to come on to other people so much. The whole social conversation thing becomes like, yeah, what's that all about? The hanging out, the model of hanging out, which is dear and near to most of our hearts for many years. I mean, I remember like when I got done with cocktail parties. Like I thought, wow, I will never have to go to another cocktail party. Isn't that groovy? I don't have to hold a martini and say, how very interesting, you don't say. Well, tell me more. Have you thought about the implications? You know, that kind of crap. Or on and on, that little dance we do. So then I got super hip. So we'd have the big hash pipe and we'd all get zonked on hash and we'd listen to the grooviest rock and roll music and we'd hang out together and we'd go on mind trips. And sound trips and food trips. Have you ever tasted pickle with, you know, coleslaw with ice cream with, you know, that whole combination in a pizza roll, you know, like that? While you're in a bath with candles and incense and... And for 3 years, I was just like super sensual as Sam. Well, it was just never enough, you know, like, yeah, I'd walk far to get a new kind of thing, you know. And then I got into this funny place where it was, you know, I'd sit home and somebody would say, like, come on over and hang out. And I think, oh, wow, you know, here we go again. The finiteness became obvious. And then it blew my mind that the only exciting new place was when I sat with an absolutely blank wall in front of me, with no sound, with earplugs in my ears, And I kept getting higher and higher and higher. And I kept saying, oh, wow, ooh, ah. And the thing was that I never got bored. And I started to get scared, like, what is the implication of this? You know, like, because when I used to teach at nursery school, you'd see a kid like that, and you'd call him a social isolate, and you'd call in his parents, and you'd say, we have a real problem here. This child doesn't mix with other children, you know. And all of the social forms we all graduated into already become archaic. I mean, you've used them up already. Which forms are you going to find until finally you sit around in a room and nobody talks because nobody has anything to say, see? Because we all know all that stuff. What are you going to say it for? You have to prove anything to me or anything? And what's, how weird when you, do you ever walk into a room where everybody's just sitting there silently without a rule saying everybody's to be silent? Everybody goes through the tension trip, like feeling inadequate. Are they supposed to do something? Or isn't there some social conversation that's to be carried on? Something's supposed to happen? What's happening, man? Nothing. What's going to happen? Nothing. Okay. What could happen? Nothing. Okay. Try living in that space for a while. Now, to help us reorganize our lives, sometimes we create new environments where we impose rules, like we impose the rule of silence. Like, I use this chalkboard for months and months, just writing everything on a chalkboard. And you got so that it's such a hassle to write, who cares? You know, why even say it? We'll just sit here. The only thing you put in is, like, milk, or, you know, I love you, or really important messages, you know. I mean, I now get a whole groups of, this is it far out, I get more letters now, practically one a week, that all it has in it is like 20 or 30 pages of Ram, 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 Ram. It's all in like Sanskrit, just the symbol, Ram, 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 or Om, Om, Om. And I read it page by page by page because the person wrote me a letter, see, and they said the highest possible thing they could say. Instead of, hello, how are you? Do you know what happened last Tuesday? And, you know, that's all the Divine Mother. That's all stuff. It's beautiful. Finally, we have very little to communicate with one another about, and that becomes a little scary. And that doesn't mean we don't do what has to be done. If I have to talk to you about the laundry, we'll talk about the laundry. But the rest of it starts to fall away because it's enough. Each moment is enough. Sitting with a blank wall with earplugs in your ear is enough. And yet the whole model you've built of life is doing things where that isn't enough. See, that's why you move away from cities often, because you move away from high energy centers, because you don't need all that stimulation. You see that people in cities are all addicted to stimulation. They're on an adrenaline addiction. You know, riots and excitement and stuff happening and cars and horns and... And when you center enough, then you can live in cities, and it's the same as living in the country. It doesn't make any difference. Until finally you're walking down the street and the inner sounds are there, see, and everything's a mandala. See, that's what starts to happen, you see. Everybody you look at's the same person. Wait until that happens. That's an interesting one. They're all your lover. They're all the beloved you've always loved for eternity. They're all every human being you've ever met. Everybody's everybody. It's really strange. See, now, this doesn't mean you've lost. All the time when you develop each new one, you think you lost something to develop it because you feel you gave it up. And the thing that keeps turning up is that everything you give up, you end up having. The minute you've given it up, you have it again, but you have it plus something else. You have it in a new way. In other words, I haven't lost my ability to discriminate. I can tell you're wearing red socks and you're barefoot, and, you know, I can see all that stuff. But I still, when I look at you, I see light. When I look at you, I see light. When I look at you, I see light. I see light and form. And the thing is, the light is the dominant factor for me now, while before the form was, before individual differences were the big deal. That's how you get ahead in this world. Be better and better at the game of individual differences. Do it faster and faster. And the person that can do individual differences most exquisitely gets to the top of the heap. And that's what education is about. learning more and more individual differences, discriminations. How do you discriminate? More dimensions. How do you analyze more dimensions? And then when you start to flip over, so everything is the same. It's all the Divine Mother. Now, if you're in the stage where you get stuck in that plane, then you're locked up. Somebody comes up and says, do you know right from wrong? And you say, it's all the Divine Mother. And boy, three psychiatrists will sign right away. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And so there are interesting steps that you experience when you're relating to people. Some people, some of us, are at the place where we're just beginning the dance. And our question is, how do you take off? How do you get it going? Others, it's going so fast, the only question is, how do you keep it together? I mean, I meet people that I look at, and they look at me, and I see they're seeing, like, light and astral things and all, and I go up and say, hey, baby, keep it together. And they say, I say, I'm just me, and you're you, and here we are, and this is the floor, and that's the way it is, right? It's like that thing that happened to me in New York City at that Unitarian church, where a guy who was very far out with a crucifix and a yarmulke and all dressed in black, when I was doing Hare Krishna and standing there all in white, he came up and there was a box of fresh strawberries somebody got, and he took two strawberries and crushed them into my hands. See, and he was crucifying me as I was dancing in front of the people doing Hare Krishna, in front of, you know, we were dancing. I was the only one dancing at the time. And I was standing there all in white, and suddenly I felt this wet, and I opened my eyes. Now, at this point, I dig the high camp, you know. I dig, like, if, baby, if this isn't showbiz, here we are in the middle of a Unitarian church with Christ having his feet washed with a disciple, and here are this, oh, wow, it's so far out. I mean, at every possible level, you know. But simultaneously, I am aware that somebody has brought an oriental rug and that I got two strawberries in my hand. If they get on the rug, they're going to ruin the rug, see? Now, in that moment, I see that what I have to do is stop and hold the strawberries, see? Okay, now that's called keeping it all together. In other words, you got to keep all the levels going. If you can be Christ being crucified, just don't let the strawberries drip on the carpet, see? And that, I began to see that that's what it meant of keeping it all together, see? It all together. I, like somebody, somebody will call me and I'll say, they'll say, would you send me these photographs for the papers or something? I'll say, sure, man, give me your address. And they'll give me the address. I'll say, what's your zip code? And the guy said, oh, I don't know. I say, well, baby, like, come on, be conscious. You got to play the game at every level. You're dealing in a system where the males are using the zip codes. Why don't you know your zip code? As if I'm too conscious to know my zip code. Like, I can't be bothered with that. But a conscious being, there isn't any bother. You just do it all because you exist at every level in the game. And you've got to acknowledge every single level at which you exist, in which this physical level is one of them, in which you use zip codes. And if you keep it together like that, then it's always harmonious. There's never any difficulty. Any difficulties is because you slipped up on one plane or another. Because you weren't here there, too. We hear all of them all the time. And the way you can do that, if you try to do that linearly with your thought, try to think your way through every plane, you can't do it. Like you meet somebody and say, here you are, beautiful girl, and I'm man, and I desire you at the same time. You're God, I'm God. You can't go through that trip all the time, man. You'd be wiping yourself. You'd be exhausted at the end of walking down the street with that thought sequence. So the way to do it is to empty your mind completely of all of them. And any label that we give each other, forget it. It isn't that one either. See? And then we just flow. And I meet you, and it's just like liquid stuff. We're just flowing together. We just flow in, and then if there's reason for us to be together, we're together. And if there's not, we flow on. And it's just flowing process with no models at all. There aren't any models. You only have a model when you need a model for some specific thing. Like somebody says, would somebody pick the women out in this room? Well, then I can come to the level there are women and men. But otherwise, I don't sit around saying, oh, there's a woman, there's a man. Now, I know that's a woman. I don't know. The thing is not to lose the ability to discriminate, but not to get addicted to it. I just have a couple of more words, and then I probably should stop. The thing about finding teachers or gurus, it is quite important that you understand that the nature of the relationship between a guru and a chela, or a disciple of a guru, is not an interpersonal relationship. That is, there is nothing in the relationship that has anything to do with this plane of reality. The level at which it exists on this plane is totally trivial. And that the going to find your guru is as phony a trip as any other trip. It's saying it can't happen till I find my guru, which is what's keeping it from happening. And the best image I have of the whole process now is that one where you see an airplane, an airfield, and the guru is circling in a holding pattern, waiting for the runway to be cleared, and you are busy driving up and down the runway looking for the guru, see? And you're looking out on a horizontal plane for the guru, and he's waiting for you to get the hell off the runway so he can land. That's roughly the way I understand the relation between a guru and a chela. He is always exactly where you are, and all it means is you've got to turn off all your stuff in order to be able to receive him and get into that relationship. That if a guru is what he is, and he is, and there's only one of them, then it is always exactly where you are when you are ready to receive him. There's nowhere you've got to go to find him. All you've got to do is open yourself to be receptive to that possibility. Now, teachers are something else. Teachers point the way, gurus beckon from beyond. And the teachers that you will need for the different parts of your particular unique method, upaya, in view of where you aren't, will become apparent to you as soon as you can ask the right questions about yourself. That is, as soon as you can define where you're not, then you start to look for that teacher who can deal with that particular thing where you're not, like take your body. Once you begin to see that your body's holding you down, you're suddenly tuned to all these body trips that everybody's on. And then you start to look for one that is in harmony with what level of spirit you are seeking. And a lot of the body trips you find out are just ego body trips, and then you find some that are very pure body trips. And you climb into one, and then that teacher teaches you what they have to teach. And then you go on from there. That's in the role of specific teachers for specific methods. That you're asking the right question is what finds you the teacher. And the just general free-floating, where can I find a teacher, is not, you're not really asking yet. You got to hurt somewhere first. Because teachers are very specific. Each one can teach you a certain thing. And finally, you will need many teachers. Many teachers along the way. I have a teacher who is an Egyptian scholar who is teaching me geometry. Because in geometry are some of the purest statements of the laws of the universe, as every Egyptian Egyptologist knows. And I went through, I got to learn geometry. I take algebra this term and geometry the next, you know. That was the level at which I went through geometry. And now I'm seeing it. It's like he starts me with my first arithmetic lesson, right? And he says, what is 2? So I say, it's 1 plus 1. He says, how could that be? There's only 1. Well, what is 2? 2 is 1 divided in half. Because nothing can be bigger than 1 since it's all 1. In other words, it's going to be, unity is the highest place you can get to. So what are you going to create systems that are other than, there's only 1 whole number? So the whole mathematics is based on fractions. Because as is true above, so below. It's all going to be true in every system. The system's going to be a pure representation. And now I'll go probably to South America for a while, and I'll study with a Sufi. And I'm not studying with a, and it's very interesting why I am going to this teacher. I am going to this teacher because everything I've heard about him turns me off. The whole model of secret schools bugs me. I don't believe in secrets. The whole idea of a guy who's like very worldly and teaches you how to be very worldly, that turns me off. And it's just that turnoff that sensitizes me to the fact that there are uncooked seeds in me that make me go to him to say, okay, here we go. Because I stick with, I'll go to a holy man that's out of this world, and then I'll come back and do worldly stuff. And here is a man who teaches holy man things through worldly stuff. He gets you so that you smoke pot, and then you drive around in cars through cities and drink orangeade. Right? Great, great trip. I've done that already. See? But he's going to do it like teaching me something through it. He's a tough teacher, I guess. And then I'll go back to my Hindu teacher, and he will teach me new breathing things and new body things and take my body and my nerves to a new level. And then I'll go to a Buddhist monastery, and I will sit for months, and I will just, every day I will get up and sit 8-10 hours a day and just sit and clear my mind. And it's such an exciting curriculum, I can't, you know, it's only just what'll happen first, you know. Because all of those will cook seeds that aren't yet cooked in me. They'll all help me through other trips. And you begin to see that you need a variety of teachers for this journey. Variety of teachers. For those of you that haven't heard it, there is a book being prepared, a box being prepared, actually, which is to be given away free. And when I was with my guru in India, he said, he sent his blessing. I was keeping notes of what was happening in the temple because it was all so far out. I mean, who would believe it? So I thought I'll make little notes so I won't forget it. Which is absurd, of course. And I got a message saying he sends his blessing, Ashirvad, for your book. And I said, well, what book is that? And they said, whatever book it is you're writing, he sent his blessings for. So I concluded I was supposed to write a book. So I came back to America and I sat down at a typewriter and I wrote a book. And I sent it to all these publishers, and they wrote back, and they said, well, we're sorry, but our line is full in that area, and we, maybe another publisher, we have a lot of mystic stories from the East. And so I thought, well, if the guru is who he is, he's the publisher too, and he wouldn't turn his own book down, so obviously that isn't the book. Right? You hear that logic? I'm going to go through that. See, he's everything. If he is who I know he is, then he's the publisher too. That's a big trip for you. So I waited, and then in the course of a few years, there were a lot of these tapes done of these kinds of things, and some were higher and some were lower, and then this groovy woman in New York started to type them all up until she had a big stack of them all typed up. And then a guy in California went through them, and he said, you know, it's very far out. Some of the tapes, parts of them, are really kind of professory, heavy, teachy, and some of them are really far out. They get like iambic pentameter. They're just like phrases. You're just like way, way out. So we cut out all the heavy stuff, and we kept all the high stuff, and we put it all together, and we had this book that had 108 pages in it. So the way we're doing that book is that we've got a group of, there are, I don't know, there's five or eight, I haven't been there yet, but it's five or eight people. It started on April 6th, and every morning they rise, they're living in the mountains in New Mexico, every morning they rise at 5, and they meditate until 8, and then they take food, and then it's all done silently, and they have these 4-foot by 4-foot sheets, and they hand rubber stamp each letter of this book onto these pages. See, so it's all organically done. And then the artists draw all around these on each page, and then at the end each page is photo offset and reduced. Then the manuscript is sent to Japan, where it's all being done on rice paper and hand, and the whole thing, you know, right? So that was the core book. And then somebody said, well, if you're going to put that out, we're going to do 20,000 copies, right? If you're going to put that out, why don't you... And it's Maharaji's book. It's the guru's book. I mean, it's not anybody else's book but his. It's his blessing. Somebody said, would you include that bibliography you've got? You said, okay. And they said, you got all these holy pictures you hang around the walls. Could you put in some of those? Okay. Would you mind putting in two copies so we don't have to tear it out of the book? You know, we'll have an extra set in the back. Okay. You said, all those quotes you have, could you put in some of those quotes so we could stick them up near the toilet and near the door, you know? It's nice by the door as you're leaving to have the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, you know, just as you're walking out every morning. That kind of thing. Okay, we'll put the little deck of cards. So now it's not a book anymore, see, it's like a box now because it's got these pictures in it and these little cards. And somebody said, say there's some groovy chanting in some of these evenings. Could you put a record in of all the chanting? So now we're working on a 12-inch record on both sides with Ram and mantra. One whole side is, or one part of one side is just Aditya Hridayam, is the teaching of the giving of that mantra. And then there are these other songs and kirtan. And then somebody said, look, you teach breathing and asanas and all that stuff and how to eat and how to live and puja tables. Couldn't you put all that into like a little cookbook about? So we have a cookbook for psychic space, just going in there. And then somebody said, say, could you put in something I could give to my parents? They don't, you know, the far book will be too far out. I mean, just a straight storyline. You went to India and what happened, you know. Or somebody said, for my parole officer, could I have something? So we have a straight story. The little story book. His story, it's called. His story. His story. And then there's this box, and there's a mandala on the box, and it's all being put together. And so all of part of the funds that you all pay in that make this all happen, all the money that I get goes to that. It's costing us $30,000 to do this thing. And we're giving it away, see, which is very far out. I always wanted to do that. You know? It's just a complete undercutting of everything I was taught. Sure, it's infantile rebellion, but whatever it is. So that'll be ready late in the summer or so on. And I have postcards, which I guess we'll have to get out of the car, which you can take if you want one. You just put your name and address and a little stamp on it and send it in, and it says, when the book is ready, notify me. And then if you want it, you can have it. Anybody, because you've already paid for it, because you're providing the green energy to make it happen. Danny, there's a box that is unopened in the back seat. If you don't find any loose ones in the back seat.
Krishna Mangala.